Hello, welcome to Guides to the Unknown. I'm Kristen.
I'm William.
And we have a special episode for you today, an Aykroyd-sized episode.
Oh my God.
That's right. We are both covering Dan Aykroyd's various paranormal supernatural beliefs.
Yeah. Put simply, Dan Aykroyd believes in aliens and ghosts.
That's right.
He is quite vocal about it.
Yes, there was no shortage of material to draw from.
No way. And recently, just in the past week, he made multiple headlines, at least on my feeds.
Yes, same.
Where he sort of clarified what he thinks aliens are up to, what they want from us.
Yeah.
And so Kristen and I talked about it and we decided, why don't we work together this time? Brother and sister.
Team up.
On the same team. Rogers. And we're going to go through Dan Aykroyd's wild beliefs.
Yes.
I'm going to start. I'm going to talk about his belief in aliens in particular because of the recent statements he made.
Right. It's a connection.
Now, I saw this all over the place. I basically could not avoid the recent news that Dan Aykroyd said multiple things about extraterrestrials and what they want from seemingly mostly women.
Yes.
And I tried to track down where it started because you see, I'm a journalist.
Oh, absolutely. You want to get to the source that that source used all the way down.
I had to peel that onion. And just like peeling an onion, it was incredibly unsatisfying. Yeah. There's nothing in the middle.
Oh.
There is no origin.
Right, just like an onion.
Well, just like an onion. You keep peeling. Then you just have a bunch of layers.
Yeah, but
it's an apt analogy. Here's why.
Yes.
I saw it shared on something like, you know, Geekology or Gizmodo or something like that, or IO9.
Right.
And then they sourced it from The Mirror, who sourced it from The Daily Star.
Oh, man.
Who
I
had
hate it when
no
that happens.
Sources.
Right, right.
And so it was just like Dan Aykroyd said this about extraterrestrials.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, when? When did he say it and to who?
Right. When and why?
I don't know. But for some reason, this week, all over the place, here are a few statements from Dan Aykroyd.
And I haven't seen them be debunked. You know what I mean?
Well, how are you going to debunk this?
Well, no, debunked isn't quite the right word. I haven't seen him comment further or try to retract or anything like that.
Oh, he's got...
You know what I mean? What?
That would be a wild spectacle to see Dan Aykroyd try to backpedal on some of his claims.
Well, this is particularly a very strange thing to say.
It is. It
so
is.
I could see if there was like, what I'm saying is, what am I saying? That it's possibly made up or whatever.
Right.
I feel like if we had like a very definite source, it would be more believable that he'd be like, oh, they took my thing out of context.
Yeah.
They might want to elaborate. The fact that he hasn't elaborated whatsoever.
I agree.
Really
I agree with
credence
that.
To, yeah, I think it'd be a follow up comment or something.
I know. I think the missing context is is loud.
Yes,
it's deafening. Not knowing why he said any of this stuff. Because here is some of the stuff that he said. He said that he thinks 60% of the planet, quote, knows it's true.
Yeah.
About UFOs. Going on to say the aliens are interested in your ova, your femininity, your reproductive parts. And your DNA. All of it.
Well, I got to say, it's kind of a package deal. Because if they're getting my ova, they're going to get the DNA
Well,
that's
kind of my, right?
Yeah.
It's like, we got it, sir.
Yeah.
I also want to say something about Dan Aykroyd. I think I'm a Dan Aykroyd fan. I enjoy much of his work. I think he's an incredibly funny person.
Yes.
He invented the Ghostbusters. I love the Ghostbusters.
Love Ghostbusters.
He is a very difficult man to understand, and he likes to go on at length.
Yes, lots of tangents that are a little bit hard to follow and see where we came from that brought us to where we are.
He's a big-time list maker.
Yep.
He will just start making a list of evidence in the middle of a story that is tangentially created to what he's trying to get across.
Right.
And I think that this sentence is part of that issue. They want your ova, your femininity, your reproductive parts, and your DNA. Anyway, he also said they would love to draw blood and fluid and would love to impregnate a woman and produce a hybrid baby. This is what they're up to here. I believe some aliens are here to harm us. There are many that come with nefarious purposes and want to use us as lab rats. And then I just wanted to call out that every single article I saw that picked up this story uses the least possible flattering photos of him that yeah. you can imagine.
Well, I'm sure they want to make him look like really crazy, and like crackpot Dan Aykroyd says whatever.
Yeah. And I both understand that, and we're going to do some of that on this very show tonight.
Yes, absolutely.
But it is also like, man, there's so many shots of him like,
yeah, you're not
like,
really
with his mouth
like,
hanging open, looking unready.
Not necessarily giving him a fair chance.
Not at
to
all.
To look like somebody who's coming from any place but one that's all over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I also do want to call out that this Daily Star article, which I think is the origin point of the story, mm-hmm. as far as I could figure out anyway, also added in this little blurb. His remarks follow singer Sean Ryder's claims that he had an encounter with a UFO with legs like a spider.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, man.
Who's that?
We may never know.
Yeah.
I wish somehow I could know.
Was the Daily Star, is that British or something, did you say? I can't
oh,
remember.
It's definitely British.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Singer Sean Ryder.
Sean Ryder doesn't sound like a very British name to me. It does to you?
Do you know who he is?
No.
I think he's maybe like the biggest star in Britain.
I thought you were saying like Sean Ryder, like such a British name.
Oh, no, no, no.
I gotcha. Like, yeah, I haven't heard of him.
Yeah, you know, like they'll be like, funny man, Curtis Morrison.
Like number one comedian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you're like, who?
A number one comedian. Right. They speak in the UK. Yeah. So here's the format of what I researched off of that article.
Right.
I watched a bunch of videos of Dan Aykroyd on various shows explaining his sightings and his viewpoint on aliens and UFOs.
Oh, you didn't watch that whole Netflix Dan Aykroyd in his trailer talking about them?
Oh, are you talking about Dan Aykroyd unplugged on UFOs?
Yes, I am.
Yes, I did watch some of that. Why don't we actually start there?
Sure.
It's so bonkos. So in 2006, a documentary was produced. I don't think it was produced by Dan Aykroyd really so much, but it is called Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs. You can look it up on Amazon. They have DVDs available.
Yeah. It used to be on Netflix. Will and I watched at least part of it pretty close to when it came out a long time ago, and it was really boring, and we turned it off.
Dan Aykroyd
right? Didn't we turn it off?
I'm pretty sure. Because even when I watched earlier this evening, I was like, I don't know. I don't remember any of this at all. And like,
I have an image of him sitting inside a trailer or something smoking a cigarette.
Yeah,
talking.
He's smoking cigarettes. He's deadly serious.
Is he like an RV? Seriously.
I don't know if it was an RV. I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. But there are a couple of cameras. One of them has his face filling the frame. And he's
nice tight shot.
There's like sort of a joke. I think he was waiting for them to set up the cameras. So the first shot of Dan Aykroyd in this thing is going, my fellow Americans, we were contacted by aliens 4 days ago, and I'm here to tell you about. Okay, do we have it yet? Did you get it?
Oh my
Did
God.
You get it? Okay. All right. And I think it's just them getting set up.
Yeah.
His face fills the frame. It's like oppressive.
Yeah.
It's frightening. And the other camera is it's basically somebody who must be like kneeling before him, looking up at him.
Oh God!
It's like from the floor, and it's wobbly, looking up.
Weird.
At Dan Aykroyd. I think it's supposed to simulate some sort of like a handheld found footage kind of vibe. It's brutally uncomfortable, and it's essentially a Dan Aykroyd crotch cam.
Strange.
Yeah. No, thank you.
No. Good thing he doesn't have OVA. You'd
but
be in
I
big
did,
trouble.
That's true.
The aliens would be watching that video. Like,
they could have seen
nobody's
it.
Nobody's business.
They took my OVA.
Yeah.
So as best as I can tell, Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs is an interview conducted by David Cereda, who is a UFOlogist, speaking with Dan Aykroyd, and he describes like talking to Dan Aykroyd and being – like, I realized that if I wanted to get a lot of information about UFOs, I just had to sit down with Dan Aykroyd and let him talk.
Right. Go right to the source.
That is one of the best and worst things you could possibly do. I think that Dan Aykroyd, this is a compliment. I think that Dan Aykroyd is a rambling man.
Yeah.
I think that he is a kind of a smooth talker. Definitely like a fast thinking, fast talking, rambling guy.
Right. There's a lot of volume there.
Yeah, a lot of volume, both like
actual auditory volume and like volume of speech and words that are coming out.
Yeah, there's a wealth of information he has to share with you. And I watched in multiple of the clips that I watched that I'm going to tell you about tonight, he goes on at length and the person interviewing him is like,
Huh?
And
he, huh? Yeah.
So Dan, Okay. Okay. So Dan, like, you have to cut him off.
Yeah.
So David Cereda sits down with him and just wants to let him go, but he sets up the interview. Here's part of David Cereda's monologue establishing the context for why we're having this conversation. If Einstein had told us about UFOs, would we have believed it? He never spoke about it. But Dan Aykroyd speaks about UFOs as if he were a full professor on the subject.
Okay.
Doesn't that feel lacking in...
Yes, in connective tissue to have the gravitas that it's meant to, I think.
And calling someone like...
They're just
like,
not comparable enough.
Describing someone as a full professor is like a colloquial phrase, you know? No, like
a full professor is really funny.
You know, like it's not like...
He's like a full-blown professor.
Yeah, basically. He's saying like, and D. Aykroyd sounds like a full-blown professor dude.
Yeah.
Like... How weird is that?
Yeah, it's weird.
If Einstein had told us about UFOs, would we have believed it? He never spoke about it.
Right. Like,
so why would you undercut your own point?
Yeah.
And it's only to drive the connection between Einstein and Dan Aykroyd, who then you describe as it's almost like he's a full professor. So he's not.
Right?
He's not.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so I did not have enough time for this recording to watch the full hour and a half long documentary, full disclosure. But I did.
God, I think I thought it was a lot longer.
Oh, that's plenty long.
No, I know, but I think I thought it was like 3 hours.
It was plenty long for old Willie.
Yeah.
So Dan Aykroyd describes how he originally got into UFOs. Uh-huh. I think we might get some more context of what his like young family life or something was like from you later on.
Yep.
But he describes being 8 years old and seeing a photograph of UFOs above the Capitol building, I think.
Okay.
And he took it to his parents and asked what those things were, and they had no answer for him.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't explain it. Then he saw the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still. And he was just hooked.
What happens in that movie?
Gort comes down.
I'm sorry. Do you have a little something in your throat?
Gort. Gort. Excuse me for one second. Gort.
Gort. Gort.
I know Gort. I've seen The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you. Now.
Okay.
I think Dad made me watch it on Laserdisc with him.
I'm sure. The name rings a bell, but I haven't seen it. Yeah. That I can remember.
I think they remade it with Keanu Reeves.
Really?
For some reason, I think that's true. It doesn't mean it is.
Yeah. I'll look it up out of curiosity. I'll give you guys a quick update.
Okay.
But you can go ahead.
This is the first place that I heard him explain what he thought aliens wanted from us.
Mm-hmm.
So in the past week, he said that aliens want women to create.
You're absolutely right.
I'm right?
Yes.
Keanu Reeves was in The Day the Earth Stood Still remake?
Yep.
Wow.
In 2008.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a hero.
Good for you. You nailed it.
Of pop culture.
Yeah. He was an extraterrestrial visitor. Visitor. Mm-hmm.
So in 2006 in this documentary, what he says aliens want is that he thinks aliens are essentially rubbernecking and studying us because of the damage we're doing to the planet.
Uh-huh.
By depleting the ozone, by building nuclear weapons, we are essentially destroying our own habitat. And he thinks you can't do that kind of stuff. You can't be that destructive without alerting your neighbors. And that aliens are essentially coming by mm-hmm. to take a look at what we're up to make sure we're not a threat.
Uh-huh.
And then on top of that, observing, look at this species that is undoing its own existence.
Yeah, like kind of like learn from our mistakes.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like...
That's an interesting idea.
Going into the jungle and trying to live with the gorillas just to see what they're up to.
Like, yeah, yeah.
That's the theory posited
right
here, essentially.
That's an interesting idea.
I think it is a very interesting idea. Here's the next interview that we're going to jump to. We're going to jump away from Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs. Let's jump over to Dan Aykroyd on Larry King Live.
Okay.
Now, there's a clip on YouTube. It's moderately popular. A lot of people may have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people may not. So I'm going to describe what Dan Aykroyd said. This is the only time, I think, in my research that I have tried to directly transcribe the things Dan Aykroyd says.
Mm-hmm.
It was very...
You got to type fast.
Very hard to do.
I did a touch of transcription myself.
Isn't it crazy?
Yes. I was really utilizing that pause and go back 10 seconds button.
Yeah. He is...
Yeah, he goes.
Rapid
fire. He flies, baby.
He really does. Yeah. I mean, it's so funny because it's one of his strengths as a performer in something like Ghostbusters.
And as a mind, kind of. And you know, he's got a lot of ideas to crank out.
100%. And I think he played true to that sort of character that he has. Like on Saturday Night Live, he was the salesman that was trying to sell you the Fish-O-Matic.
Yeah.
Which is a blender that grinds up a fish to turn into a fish drink.
Right.
And the whole joke is that he's like a used car salesman being like, that's right, with the 2,500 Fish-O-Matic, you can have your very own fish drink ready for you in the morning. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Like just constantly rambling. Do not stop. Don't take breaths. Mm-hmm. That's how he talks in real life.
Yeah.
These are the things he said to Larry King.
Yeah.
I don't think we will ever have a formal relationship, a formal contact with any alien species out there, especially after 9/11. Everyone gets uncomfortable as the second he says that.
Yeah.
If they were observing that, goodbye, human race. And honestly, I don't think they're a mass threat, but I do believe they're breaking the law. I'm serious. Title 18, 1202, read the Travis Walton story.
Okay.
I'm going to slow that down.
Yeah, so what about the law and the aliens are breaking the law?
That's how I felt.
Yeah.
This is interesting because you can have the authentic experience as if you watched it.
Yes.
I'll say everything fast and then we'll slow it down.
Great. Perfect.
What he said was, I don't think they're a mass threat, but I do believe they are breaking the law. I'm serious. Which seems to underscore the fact that he knows what he's saying is psychotic.
Yeah, like I'm not kidding. I'm serious. I know this sounds nuts.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
The aliens are breaking the law.
Okay. Do you know what?
I have no additional context, but he goes on to say Title 18, 1202.
Can we look that up?
Is that the law they're breaking? Is there a law that says you may not be an alien observer? Title 18, 1202. Now, I wrote it like it's a year. Like
right.
It's the year 1202. I don't know if it's like 12-02. I don't know how laws are even written.
It's about ransom money.
Okay.
U.S. Code 18... 1202.
What is it?
Ransom
say?
Money. Let's see.
See, because this is also something else that I tried to do in my research with him, because he throws out these things. He's a master performer because he's not only speaking to the person who's interviewing him,
right.
He is speaking to the home audience and giving them work to do. He will frequently, as I go through this, be like, and everybody out there should look this up. And I would furiously start taking notes, look it up, and be like, how is this connected at all, Mr. Aykroyd?
I'm not sure. So I'm on govinfo.gov, which is certainly not.
Govinfo.gov?
I can't believe this is a government site.
Govinfo.gov?
And it's written all, I'm sure somebody who's like familiar with laws would get this, but look, it's just written kind of, you know, so it says publication title. It's Title 18, Crimes and Criminal Procedure. The category is bills and statutes contained within Crimes and Criminal Procedure, Crimes, Kidnapping, Ransom Money. So is he saying they're holding us for ransom in some way? Or did you just get his 18s and 1202s mixed up?
I don't know. I thought the point was that they were leaving us alone. They saw us going to war with each other and killing each other and said that they won't. He said that he doesn't think we will ever have a formal relationship, a formal contact with any alien species out there, especially after 9/11, the idea being that we're so brutal to each other that they wouldn't want to make contact with us. So how can they be breaking the law and bless you.
Thank you.
And like trying to hold something for ransom. I don't understand.
I think he might have gotten his numbers mixed up.
But then he says, read the Travis Walton story, which Kristen and I covered on this show.
Yes.
He said a lot of things that I was like really excited to hear about.
Yeah.
He talked about the Hills,
who
we talked about someone recently, that couple that saw a UFO. Like,
oh,
in the woods.
Yeah.
He talked a lot about stuff that we've covered on this show before. I'm going to try to put links to all of these clips that I'm talking about in those show notes if people want to check
them. Cool.
So Larry King follows up and goes, so how do you arrest them?
Yeah, what do all the suspenders think about this?
So his question after all that was, so how do you arrest them?
Honestly, I think that's a good place to start because you and I both reacted my first question when you read all that, even though it was a lot of stuff, was the aliens are breaking the law.
He could have said the most like explosive, offensive thing, and then followed it up with, "And I think the aliens are breaking the law."
Yeah,
and you'd forget everything he said.
Still, your first
prior
question, like, how so now?
How do you think? What?
Yeah.
They broke the law. What law?
Right.
Your law?
Yeah. What laws apply?
Ackroyd's law.
And then he throws out an actual law, and it's.
It's not that.
Neither here nor there.
It all goes up in smoke.
Yeah. Like so many wisps.
So he follows up with, that's the thing. The FBI should be on that right away. I don't think they're a mass threat. If you want to save lives in this country, teach people to drive better, remove the cocaine appetite in the United States, and stop people from texting while driving. I look at this through the entertainment filter, Larry.
Wowie. Okay, not wrong about any of that. Sure. But
I don't know.
I don't know how it really applies.
It doesn't.
I guess his point is like,
the point is,
yeah, that's a problem, but it's not as pressing as these problems, but we're not, whatever.
The point is, I don't think it does apply. All right, let's jump. The next three things, the final three things I really have for you are all moderately recent. They all take place around the same time. They're more specifics about the sightings he himself has had.
Okay, cool.
Which I find very interesting to break down the way that he describes them in these different places.
Yeah.
So in 2015, he was on the Huffington Post live show. He says he has seen, personally seen, four UFOs.
Okay.
The Air Force has been very interested in this. They don't deny the existence of these hyperdynamic, super aerodynamic craft. He is essentially making the case that the government and the Air Force don't deny that things have been sighted,
right,
but they will do anything in their ability to avoid saying it's extraterrestrial.
Right. They'll say it's unidentified,
yes,
but that doesn't necessarily mean extraterrestrial.
Yes. They will say what they don't know about it. They will never confirm things that they think they do know about it. He then says stuff like this. He spoke to Bruce Maccabee, a former consultant in the Department of Service Naval Warfare in the Navy there.
In the Navy there? What?
Bruce Maccabee, a former consultant in the Department of Service Naval Warfare in the Navy there. Anyway, he has a book right now called UFO-CIA Connection, or the UFO-FBI-CIA Connection.
Which one?
I don't know which one. Then he goes, then he says, I saw two of them. So he moves on from Bruce Maccabee.
Okay. He just gets so excited.
He just gets so excited.
Yeah.
He says he saw two of them, and they were definitely aerial constructs. One had a light, the other was dull gray. One of them was going slow, the other was hovering over him.
Ooh.
The two others he saw, this is the way he described it. He saw the two others with his wife and friends in Martha's Vineyard. It was a high altitude sighting.
Okay.
Which makes me think he was in an airplane.
Oh, okay.
Or I should ask you, what do you think a high altitude sighting is?
I have no idea. I was hoping that you would say something next that would help me understand that.
I'll have further context on it later of what that means. What do you think it means to have a high aerial
was at a high altitude.
Okay, spoiler alert, you're correct.
Okay.
I watched multiple interviews where he kept describing how he had a high altitude sighting, and I was like, did you see something in an airplane, Mr. Aykroyd?
Yeah.
Can you please be more specific, Mr.
Let's drill down on the details.
Why are you saying they're aerial constructs? Why aren't you saying they're ships? Why are you saying high altitude sightings? Why aren't you saying, hey, I was in an airplane, or hey, they were really high up in the sky?
Right.
It's always couched in these terms, these very technical terms that I think he made up.
I know. I wonder if it's either that he's reading very technical material from like Navy guys or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's the way his mind thinks of these things as, or it's a way to sound more authoritative and trustworthy because you're not just some yahoos who's just like yelling about whatever. You're talking about things in technical terms and you have a scientific mind.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
I also saw in some of these interviews a man who has been probably roundly mocked for this belief for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
In some of the interviews, he's almost apologetic for believing in this stuff.
Yeah.
And it made me feel really bad for
him. Yeah, that sucks.
So I do wonder if he dresses it up with overly technical terms so that it comes across with an element of gravitas, intelligence.
More reputable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So he says that they were flying side by side about 100,000 feet up, and they were going fast. He then goes on to say that there was a guy who saw a craft moving at 70,000 miles an hour, taking sharp turns, but he believes in what Lord Hill Norton said. Then he moves on and says...
Of course he does. He doesn't say what Lord Hill Norton says?
No.
I believe what Lord Hill Norton says. And anyway...
And additionally, that's almost exactly how it goes. He's like, but I believe in what Lord Hill Norton says. He moves on. I know from another interview, Lord Hill... Because he keeps bringing up the same stuff. So I was originally going to structure this as like... I believe in what Lord Hill Norton says, and then yeah. I would leave it hanging until the interview where he does say what it is. I'll just right. spoil it and just tell you from another interview
yeah.
when he goes, and there's this really fascinating guy, Lord Hill Norton, who said, and there's this really fascinating guy, yeah. Lord Hill Norton. Look him up. Lord Hill Norton, N-O-R-T-O-N, who said this. Like, he does a lot of, like, direct to the camera, here's what you should Google.
And also, I wonder if that gives him... Again, it maybe plays in the same thing of like authoritativeness. He's like, you can even look it up. I'm not trying to hide anything from you. This information is out there. Like, it's real. You know
I
what I
wish,
mean?
I wish he had a like an Alex Jones mm-hmm. style. Like, there's no,
I would totally dip into that.
There's no like leash on him. He's just yeah. sitting at a desk and just going. Cause I really think that you could be like, yeah, somebody in Tennessee says they saw a UFO, Dan. Can you fill 3 hours
oh, yeah.
off of me just telling you that?
Yeah, you're right.
Yes, I can.
Yes.
Yes.
No need to say anything else.
Well, on Larry
you know
King.
It just occurred to me. I don't know why I never thought about this in connection that the Coneheads are aliens. Never thought about that before, right?
Oh. But they come from France. That's weird.
Yeah.
What, Yeah, what's up with that?
I don't know. I guess
he loves
just...
ghosts. He wrote Ghostbusters. He loves aliens.
He wrote the Coneheads in there. Yeah.
Is the Conehead movie good?
I think so.
I watched a lot.
I'm about to say we watched it a whole lot.
So
are
much.
There two movies?
Sometimes I feel I've got to get away.
It certainly was good to young Chrissy and Willie. You know what? That's something I haven't seen since we were kids. I don't think I've seen Coneheads like since.
It would be a real
then.
Wild trip to watch Coneheads.
That's what I'm saying. I bet we would remember a bunch of stuff and be like, whoa. Like, we would all of a sudden be able to finish lines and be
yeah.
like.
I remember Connie Conehead could eat a full Subway foot long in one bite.
It was gross, though.
And Chris Farley was stunned.
Yeah.
Chris Farley plays like a little boy grown man. You know, like, from yeah. the Chris Farley show type of Chris Farley. They're like really shy and bashful.
They're high schoolers and they're like dating.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
He's easily in his 30s.
Definitely.
So good. Oh, that's great. All right. I would like to watch Coneheads, please. You think it's on Blu-ray? Is there any chance? Is there a sequel?
That's what I just said. I think there might be two. Let's see.
I don't
know. Coneheads.
It is so weird. Like, kudos right. to Dan Aykroyd.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, cheers to you.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd.
Big pointy hats off.
For taking the things that you're passionate about and turning them into entertainment.
Absolutely.
And being willing to poke fun at them. Like, they're comedy. They're making
yeah.
fun of stuff. But he takes this stuff. I mean, honestly, I can't overstate it enough. He is deadly serious
mm-hmm.
about all of this. And it's up to you whether or not you believe in it. According to Dan Aykroyd, 50% of people believe in aliens.
Right,
he goes,
60,
I'm
right?
just one of them. Well, later he says 60.
Okay.
I'm also fascinated in tracking how he describes the same thing over
yeah,
time.
Yeah, yeah,
50
and if
turned
that
into
changes,
60
yeah.
at some point.
So real quick, there is no Coneheads 2, but it's apparently a very common Mandela effect sort of thing where people swear that they've seen Coneheads 2.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I might have an answer for that.
Yeah. It looks like there's some speculation about it, that there's like other footage or something. What's your answer?
I'd like to posit a theory.
Okay.
Maybe it's because the Coneheads is weirdly one of those SNL movies that we don't really think of as being
right.
SNL movies. The Coneheads was a sketch on SNL before it was ever a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe people are thinking of some of the events
yeah.
from the sketch and being like, well, that didn't happen in the movie, so there must
so
be
must,
another.
Yes, that's what they're positing in this Reddit thread, it looks like.
The other thing that I want to posit is that Coneheads, I think, was endlessly played on Comedy Central in the
yes.
90s.
Oh, definitely.
And so you would dip in and dip out of it.
Yep.
All the time. So, like, you would start watching it from 20 minutes into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like I saw the middle of Coneheads way more than I saw the beginning or end.
Yeah, yeah.
And so,
totally true.
There's a whole part at the end of the movie where Dan Aykroyd fights a giant alien monster by playing golf.
Uh-huh. And yeah, I don't remember it that well, like off the top of my head.
Yeah,
really.
I remember that clearly because I thought that was in Coneheads 2, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's somehow part of Coneheads 1.
Yeah.
They go to Earth, go back to space, then come back to Earth in that movie, and it's just a lot of movement.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. A
lot happening. I just remembered I wanted to be a Conehead for Halloween like a couple of years ago.
Oh, that's awesome.
But all the cones suck. If you go on Amazon and read the reviews, unless things have changed, I didn't find any cone that was going to be satisfactory.
Shocking like people- that all the cones they sell to be Coneheads for Halloween suck. That's shocking.
Like I would look at pictures of people who are like, I had to do this to it and I had to do that. I had to like do a hack for the Conehead and I kind of made it work. And I would look at the picture they attached to the review. And I was like, not good enough for me.
I'm not going to the party with a dented cone.
No, that yes, people's cones were caving in. They were like stuffing them with stuff, and then you could see the seam and everything. And I was like, if I'm gonna be a Conehead, I want it to be primo. And it also sounded uncomfortable.
Coneheads is a pretty good costume idea for now. Right? Also the Roxbury guys.
Oh, that is a good guess.
Maybe a lot of old SNL characters. Or you know, Dan Aykroyd and Steve Martin did the two wild and crazy guys.
Yeah, that's
just
true.
Just be one of them.
Yeah, that's true. I'm one of the wild and crazy guys.
I'm a wild and crazy guy.
Well, I wanted to be Garth one year, and I tasked Will with picking up the wig for me because I like knew it was theirs. I don't even know why I would have done this. Whatever. I asked Will to pick up the wig for me, and he got like a beautiful Hollywood woman wig and not like a rocker wig. It was like a last minute situation, so I just had to be something else. I don't remember what I was.
I thought it was fine.
Yeah, but like...
Why was it my job to figure out your costume?
I don't know, William.
You're so busy. What am I, your assistant, getting you your Garth wigs?
Not anymore.
You certainly have his glasses.
Not after that job performance. Do I?
It didn't occur to me, but you kind of do have Garth's glasses.
I do.
I mean, they're cool.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. No, they kind of are, though. They're huge. I really like them.
Thank you.
Thank you. They're right. Tiny and toasty. The opposite
tiny
of my glasses.
And toasty. So here's what Lord Hill Norton said that Dan Aykroyd really believes in.
Yeah.
They can't, the government, the big they with a capital T, they can't tell us the truth because society will
can't handle it.
Apart.
I mean, I think that that's not a terrible theory.
I don't think it's a terrible theory. I think it it's a whole different can of worms of like what it would actually be.
Yeah.
But basically Dan Aykroyd says that we would start to look at our authority figures, the government, the president, our entire organization, and go, well, you're not in charge.
Right. You're not really the boss.
They're in charge up there.
Right.
So what are you trying to pull on us?
Or what's the thing, a movie or TV show or something, where the idea is that we might unite even further, become even closer?
Watchmen.
Yes.
I believe in that. I think
we need.
I think we need a threat from outer space so that we're all like, can we be nicer to each other? Spookier stuff exists off the planet.
The part of me that's optimistic and thinks the best of people likes that idea, but like seeing some of the stuff that's happened in the last couple of years, I hate to say, I think that there are more people who are ready to like, not maybe not more people, but there are a lot of people who are ready to be fueled by hate and fear who would go ham.
Yeah, I completely
agree. So I actually don't think it'd be more likely to fall on the side of violence than unification. I hate to say.
Yeah.
That's what I would prefer unification. I like that idea, but I don't trust.
I guess it's just there's nothing stopping us from treating each other with respect now.
Right.
And
so
we
like,
don't do that.
Would it really be that much of a catalyst for that? Or would it be like, oh, let's mess stuff up?
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but I think probably the latter. I don't think it would be complete collapse, but I think there'd be more of that than love and unification.
Maybe. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Well, maybe someday we'll find out.
God,
aliens
I don't
come.
Want to.
All right. So here are some things that he said. Oh, actually, real quick, to wrap up what he thinks Lord Hill Norton was right about, saying society will fall apart if we're given the truth about aliens.
Mm-hmm.
He then goes, look up the Brooks Institution in 1958.
Did you do that?
Who did a study he's basically saying the Brooks Institute did a study in 1958 saying that society would fall apart if we were given the truth about aliens. I looked this up. That didn't happen. At least from what I could see. Maybe the Brooks Institution did a report about the collapse of society.
Uh-huh.
It seems like a lot of the things they do are like evaluating the state of the world given recent events that have occurred on the planet.
Yeah, I also still don't understand how that study would happen.
It wouldn't. That was
like literally, how do you measure that and rule that?
it's
to be the result.
It's a hypothetical, bizarro notion that you cannot test.
Yeah, you can't prove that.
The Brooks Institution absolutely did not do a test, say, that proved that if we knew aliens were real, society would fall apart. It didn't happen, Mr. Aykroyd.
Yeah. There's a little something in mind, too, that isn't...
He points to a lot of evidence.
Yeah.
A lot of evidence.
Yeah.
And then I Google it, and I'm like, this has nothing to do with anything. You can stretch it to be like, well, they're talking about like the collapse of society because of socioeconomic factors.
Yeah.
And Dan Aykroyd might be being like, well, those factors would change if aliens were real. So therefore, the Brooks Institute is saying that aliens would cause
that's
X.
Possible.
That's what I think might be happening.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to try to move faster. I didn't think this was going to take as long as it's taking me.
Mm-hmm.
He was on a show called the Build Series Show in 2017 where he reaffirmed the four UFO sightings he has seen. He said here, with no clarification, he saw two in a high-altitude sighting.
Again with this high altitude?
He said he saw one fairly close at the farm a couple years ago.
Okay.
And then he digs in on
this one. I know a little bit about
one.
The farm.
You do?
I do.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one he digs in on, the fourth. One really, really weird one in Montreal, he says. He was on the 23rd floor of the Queen Elizabeth Hotel. He's sitting there with some friends. He sees what looked like an air mattress, but it's 100 feet long, 50 feet wide, quote, tipped over with bulbs on the bottom.
Okay.
No idea what that means.
Yeah.
He didn't even gesticulate in a way that gave me an idea of...
Not even a physical context clue.
No. And it was moving slowly and just it stopped and it turned and went out over the river and we were just like, what's that thing? And this is where he starts to look to me like a kid who's embarrassed at what he's telling you.
Uh-huh.
He starts shrugging and going like, I don't know. I mean, this is just what I believe. And he starts to really, it made me feel bad. He really starts to backpedal and be like, I'm sorry I'm like this is almost what he was saying. Like, I'm sorry I'm saying this. I know you all think I'm crazy.
Yeah.
And that gave him more credibility than anything else. The fact that he was just sort of like, it felt like
more human and kind of credible and relatable than spouting off high aerial sightings.
Yeah. He seemed just as surprised by his like lengthy diatribe on the air mattress UFO he saw as everyone else. He was like, and then realized like, oh, I did it again. I said stuff again that people don't respond well to.
It so honestly must be very hard.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, even though he's popping off and saying things don't make sense, it's kind of brave to be putting yourself in situations where you're in a room where you know that pretty much everybody's going to think you're crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know
exactly.
What I mean? Like, he's not going out on the Build series knowing that this is an audience full of people who are like ufologists and people who are into this, but he's still like talking about it with the same conviction, knowing this is a room full of people who are probably gonna be like, what?
I do
like,
think
that's brave. I would have a very hard time doing that. I don't know if there are a lot of things in my life that situation would come up for me, but hypothetically, that would be tough for me.
It does seem to come up a lot though, where it's also like, well, they invited me on another show.
Yeah.
I know I'm going to talk about aliens again. even if
I can't help myself. Yeah.
I'm going to.
Yeah.
Here he – I actually was wrong before when I said what Lord Hill Norton was about.
Uh-huh.
In that previous interview, that was when he goes, I believe in what Lord Hill Norton said, and then moved on. That whole thing about society, that was the Brookings Institution alone.
Okay.
Had nothing to do with Lord Hill Norton.
Yeah.
Here's where he explains Lord Hill Norton's theory. Lord Hill Norton was a British defense staff executive.
Okay.
I
was about to say, I already am lost.
I don't think that's his title. I think maybe it's something like that.
Yeah.
Because it's Dan Aykroyd, so he said it as Lord Hill Norton, a British defense staff executive. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, well.
What?
He's British.
Yeah.
He's
that's all I got.
British and maybe worked in the Department of Defense.
Yeah.
Staff executive.
Yeah, staff executive.
I don't know.
Seems like word soup.
It's an Aykroydism.
Yeah.
But Lord Hill Norton said that we're being visited by 23 species in 23 different kinds of ships.
Okay.
He starts fumbling again. He's clearly embarrassed. And he starts going, you know, I'm not the only one. I'm not alone in this.
Yeah.
He says. And then he starts talking about Lawrence Rockefeller, the great philanthropist who saw them land on his lawn. They would wink at him, and eventually he went, what are these things? So he did the Rockefeller Report, which seems to have been about getting people stories from people who've experienced UFOs.
They would wink at him?
Lawrence Rockefeller.
With those big eyes? Must be quite a wink.
The great philanthropist saw them land around his house,
uh-huh.
And they would wink at him.
They would wink at him. That makes it sound like that's something they consistently did.
Constantly
they
landing.
They would wink at him.
Constantly yeah. landing. Every night. It's just always
the
happening.
The shades closing on those big oval
Not
eyes.
Again?
Yeah.
And then the phrasing on this is so specific. Eventually he went, what are these things?
Eventually.
On the 50th day in a row when it happened, yeah. he finally went, all right. I've got to get to
ask.
The bottom of this.
Yeah.
What the heck are these things?
Wowie kazowie.
Lawrence Rockefeller. I did not look up the Rockefeller Report.
I'm not sure that exists.
But it seems to be about going around to people that, you know, served and getting their story of something that they may have reported that was a UFO or just, you know,
yeah.
average Joes. And then he says this. And this is going to screw you up. Are you Googling mm-hmm. the Rockefeller Report right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. If it doesn't give you anything immediately, we'll just have to move on.
Move on.
Because he says this. Get that phone ready.
Okay.
He says this.
Yeah.
If you want to Google a really good one, Fortenberry Nash, Miami Herald, 1947. They saw 8 discs. They were flying a plane. It made the Miami papers.
Fortenberry Nash?
John Mack was studying the concept of abductions. He wrote a great book called Abduction. That's what Dan Aykroyd said, and I fiendishly wrote it down and paused and reversed. And Fortenberry Nash? Miami Herald. He's going like he's both fast and slow on this one.
Nash.
He goes, if you want to Google a really good one, and then he slows down.
Okay, here we go.
He goes, Fortenberry Nash, and then he looks off in the distance. He's pulling from his memory use.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He goes, Fortenberry Nash.
It's comma Miami
Herald.
Yeah.
And he thinks 1947. He's got an encyclopedic
right.
knowledge of all of these things.
Yes. Yeah, well, so there's something called the Nash Fortenberry UFO sighting.
Okay.
So he flip-flopped him a little bit. But it was an unidentified flying object sighting that occurred on July 14th, 1952, when two commercial pilots claimed to have seen 8 UFOs flying in a tight echelon formation over Chesapeake Bay in Virginia.
Okay.
Fortenberry Nash. I had Fortenberry Mash for breakfast this morning.
Real quick. You yeah. said that happened in Virginia?
Yes.
He said it was the Miami Herald. You said that was in 1952?
Right.
He said it was in 1947. You said it was Nash Fortenberry? It was Fortenberry Nash. So he was
gone. Well, vice versa.
He
but
was
yeah.
pulling from his memory. But
it's faulty. It's faulty. I thought maybe it was Fortenberry Nash or whatever, comma, Miami Herald. This is a separate incident we can look up. But no, this is all the same incident. It's not quite right.
That's awesome. What that's
Fortenberry
so...
Nash Miami Herald becomes Nash Fortenberry Chesapeake, Virginia.
1952, not yeah. 1947.
Right.
It's awesome to be like
because people are such authority.
If you want a really good one,
yeah,
Fortenberry Nash Miami Herald. It's like a Karnak, like
yeah,
Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
Like, try to think.
Put this into Google. You know, if you put quotation marks on either side of it, it'll bring you the results for exactly those words, and that's what you're going to want.
That's what you're not going to yeah. want to do. You want Google to do that. Did you mean Fort Nash? You want Google to – don't put the quotes on anything.
That's his handler talking to
Here's
you.
Here's what you need to
– Aykroyd is telling you to put the quotes. He's like, write this down. Get this or whatever. And then his handler's like, look, don't do the quotes.
Don't
thing.
Do the quotes.
It'll bring you the results – better if
he's told enough
quotes.
People
yeah,
the
yeah,
wrong
yeah.
thing that Google knows to give you the right thing now. Yeah. And then John Mack was studying the concept of abductions. He wrote a great book called Abduction. All right. Last interview I watched. It was live on the radio on Sway's Universe. You know who Sway is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
He was like an MTV VJ mm-hmm. for a while. Now he's like an interviewer and yeah. personality has his own radio show.
Yep.
He explains the Martha's Vineyard sighting with a little more clarity.
A little more?
A lot more.
Oh, okay.
He says he went outside to relieve himself because he likes to do that outside because he's a man. Sway says immediately, as if it's...
It's like, I hear you. Yeah, me too.
No, 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 no. Sway says, as if this is like a gotcha expose, he goes, did you defecate yourself or did you defecate or did you piss? He says it like that.
It's also really
now,
funny.
Did you defecate or did you piss? He says it like it's, I'm going to get you. Which is it, sir?
In a non-jokey way or a jokey way?
He's clearly joking. Okay. I think it was accidentally delivered as if he's doing a police interrogation.
It's weird to use like the dictionary term for defecate and then
oh, the whole thing's weird. That's why I made the notes. It's real strange.
Not defecate or urinate.
I don't think Sway was really having this. It's just sort of my point. There's another instance where Sway jumps in. I'm like, Sway, man, just let him go.
Yeah.
Just let him go. You have to just you don't know my life, Sway. You don't know me, man. Ride. You don't know my life, Sway. You know
what that is? No, I don't.
It's Kanye yelling at Sway.
Really?
Screaming at him. They're sitting side by side and Kanye won't look at him. He's going, you don't know my life, Sway. You don't. It's like it's your Sway and I'm Kanye. Look in the opposite direction. You don't know my life, man. What? It's wild. That's also what Jenny Slate said to me. Maybe I'm getting my wires crossed.
I don't know about that.
So what Sway said was, did you defecate or did you piss? What I wrote was, did you defecate yourself or did you piss? Freudian slip. Anyway.
Freudian piss.
Aykroyd played it off like the master that he is.
Yeah.
He goes, I'd like to master that.
Wait.
Defecating standing up, I guess.
Outside,
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Point is, listened to a whole thing, wrote it down, took a lot of time, don't know what happened.
I'd like to master that.
I'd like to master that.
Going outside to defecate.
Be right back, everybody. It's me, Dan Aykroyd, again, leaving the party early.
Dare to dream.
I'll be back. Porch is but a doorway. Better close the windows. I'll be back. Okay. He says out there he saw two objects glowing brightly edge to edge, two discs. What? Holding my hand.
It's so stupid. It's so stupid.
You're just butt cheeks. Aykroyd lowers his pants around his ankles when he stands to pee like a kid. Be right there. Be right in a minute, honey. I saw orbs.
He went outside to relieve himself because it's what men do. It's fun or whatever.
Yeah.
When he's doing that, he sees two orbs glowing brightly. Come on.
Oh, Dan.
Come on.
Dan. Oh, you handed it to us, Dan.
On a silver platter.
He handed it to us.
A flying saucer, he handed that to us.
Mm, yeah. He digs a little further into the sighting he had on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
He saw a little red light coming along the power lines. He thought it was a helicopter at first. He turned on the lights from a police bike he has.
Wow.
Just mentioned in passing as normal. So he's flashing the red and blues.
I feel like talking so fast. Like, there's no room for Sway, for Sway to be like, what?
There's no time to play catch up with this guy. He's going 1,000 miles an hour.
So that never gets commented on again, I bet, right?
No. Yeah. No. But he does say that he did it to see if he could, you know, get a little attention.
What?
Just attention seeking, trying to distract a helicopter. I don't know. It worked.
Oh, the police bike with the flashing lights to get attention from the helicopter?
Yes.
I see.
The lights come toward him. They hover.
It's like a felony.
They hover about, maybe that's what he meant by they're committing crimes himself. He's
impersonating a police officer.
He's projecting.
Yeah.
He says that this thing hovered 700 feet above him, popped a light on him. He took a look at it. It flipped its light off and flew away slower than a helicopter might have been going.
Mm. Okay.
It's not really a
cool.
It's cool when something can go even faster than...
Yeah, it's surprising, which could lend credence to the veracity of it.
Are you telling me a helicopter can't go as slow as it wants?
Yeah.
It's like getting in a car and it immediately gets to 30 miles an hour. You can't go any slower.
Yeah.
Is that how helicopters work?
Actually, maybe, because their propellers keep them up.
But I think
maybe
they hover, don't they?
Maybe if you go too slow, then you know, you're going to drop like a stone. I don't know.
I have no idea. So here's where Sway gets involved again, because Dan Aykroyd moves on.
Mm-hmm.
He moves on to that Queen Elizabeth Hotel thing again, where he saw that air mattress looking one. He says that he was on the 23rd floor. Sway immediately interrupts and goes, the number 23. like that. And he's definitely referencing the Jim Carrey movie. There's no doubt in my mind. There's
weird.
No,
yeah, because what else does a 23 have associated with it?
Nothing. Dan Aykroyd.
Maybe it was that time.
Dan Aykroyd was on a roll and clearly feels like he was interrupted. And he starts, but he goes like, yes. He tries to just be kind to someone. He goes, yeah, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, numerology. A lot of people believe in that. My favorite number is 505.
Okay.
Favorite number.
Whew.
Daniel Aykroyd trivia for you.
Yeah.
His favorite number is 505.
We move fast here in Aykroyd land.
The only addition to the story that he makes about the Queen Elizabeth Hotel sighting is that he says now he saw the air mattress looking UFO, mm-hmm. thought it was really weird, thought it was a bunch of balloons at first, but then he went inside and looked in a book and saw something that looked a whole lot like it.
Just a book.
Well, it's Dan Aykroyd's house, so they're all UFOs.
I know, but still, it's just, again, it's just a weird rapid-fire belly. I went inside, I looked in a book, and there's something just like it. You're like, what?
You're like, I don't know. What are you talking about? What? Dan, you said 50 things in the span of 5 seconds, and I don't know where to start.
Yeah.
And I forgot half of them already. You're too fast. You're too fast, Dan. You're too fast.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, he's talking about UFOs that go 700,000 miles an hour.
Yeah.
He is...
Oh, yeah.
Flying.
Yeah, he's got an accelerated speed.
He is remarkable.
Yes.
And I don't, whatever. Anyway, that is, oh, you know what? There's one thing I didn't read. This would be the perfect capper.
Yeah.
I probably should have read it to start.
Smooth move.
So again, the topic was all about sort of how Dan Aykroyd talks about aliens. I don't really know his background, why he believes in these things.
Yeah.
But again, in that documentary, he says it all started from the age of 8 with sort of a general curiosity mm-hmm. about aliens through like movies and photographs and stuff. Now, you and I are big fans of a podcast called How Did This Get Made?
Yeah.
Couldn't think of the name. I'm a huge fan.
Huge fan.
And one of the segments they do on that show, it's all about bad movies. Yep. Paul Scheer looks up 5-star reviews on Amazon mm-hmm. to give a second opinion about something that's supposed to be crappy.
Yeah.
So I have my own second opinion.
Ah, very good.
This is a 5-star review pulled from Amazon on Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs.
Oh, okay.
The title is Otherworldly Wisdom from the Master. And it goes a little something like this. Don't ask me why. But I seem to trust Dan Aykroyd. Don't think it's because he was on Saturday Night Live in my distant youthful 20s, nor has it anything to do with his stellar movie career. Maybe it's because...
I don't know. Sounds like it kind of does. He's
not
really being neutral about this.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because his last name sounds almost alien. Aykroyd. Well, anyway... In this film, it is almost as though he isn't telling me everything he knows.
Oh, my God.
Who are you going to call?
Dan Aykroyd.
I called Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
And he delivered.
But you just said he didn't tell you everything he knows.
It's confusing. Also, usually when people go like, who are you going to call? Unless you're doing the song and it's Ghostbusters,
usually
it's a hypothetical question.
Yeah.
Who are you going to call? It's like, well, we know the obvious answer. Uh-huh. But he goes, who are you going to call? I called Dan Aykroyd, and he delivered what they want us to know. Hmm. So he's essentially accusing Dan Aykroyd of giving the party line on
aliens. Yes, exactly. He's being the mouthpiece for the alien agenda because he himself is an alien with a last name like Aykroyd.
Yeah. I enjoyed this documentary more than the others. I bought a used one because a new one costs as much as my 52 Buick back in 68. Thanks.
Wow. To the point, really more about the Amazon process. I always like those reviews where it's like a 5-star review for something. They're like, this came on time right to my door.
This was promptly delivered.
And the package was here.
Yeah.
You're like, okay.
Exactly. Anyway, 5 stars.
Yeah.
For Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs.
Hell yeah.
There you go.
Well, you know what? I give that segment 5 stars.
Thanks, Chrissy.
You're welcome, William.
All over the map and confusing. It's very hard to research.
What else could it be? I can't imagine it being anything but that.
Very hard to
It's perfectly thematically appropriate. Okay, so I'm going to continue the Dan Aykroyd talk, obviously, and we're going to talk about his belief in ghosts now, but more specifically, the family history of the Aykroyds that led him to believe in ghosts.
Yeah.
It runs deep. This ectoplasmic river that runs below New York also this runs as deep as that.
Yes.
Let's say.
Okay, yeah.
So it started generations ago. Dan has said that that you know, some people growing up, they would see National Geographics lying around their house on tables and stuff. And he grew up with the American Society for Psychical Research journals lying all over the place. So he was flipping through those his whole life. That's just kind of the environment that he grew up in.
Yeah.
And his dad was into that stuff because his dad was into that stuff. So this starts with Dan Aykroyd's grandfather.
So D. Aykroyds love this stuff.
Yes. D. Aykroyds are all over it. The Aykroyd family loves it. So I found also, William, some timely material from Dan Aykroyd about this subject. He was just interviewed on Canadian radio show Q with Tom Power on the 16th, which was last week, to promote his book about Caesars, the drink a Caesar, which is a Canadian Bloody Mary made with Clamato instead of just traditional tomato juice. He has a book coming out called The Caesar, 50 Years, 50 Stories, celebrating a half century of Canada's national cocktail.
Are you sure it's not Clamato?
I think it's Clamato.
But it would be tomato.
Clamato? No, I think it's Clamato.
Okay.
Haas and Pfeffer Incorporated. So on this radio show, he said that his grandpa was kind of the paranormal expert in his area at the time, which was like the late 1800s to early 1900s. And that if somebody came through town, and this was in Canada, just outside of Ontario, claiming to have some sort of skill, he would investigate them. So it'd be psychics, mediums. He fires this off like this is a normal thing. We never come back to it. Precipitated painters, which he explained were people who would sit about 5 feet away from a canvas, wiggle their fingers at the canvas, and a painting would take shape without any visible paint.
He doesn't get into that?
No. That's it.
Okay.
He's just explaining what his grandpa was like, and that's part of it. And I was like, what?
Say no more.
Yeah. And that his grandpa would either be into it and be like, oh, wow, this is genuine, or he'd bust those people as hoaxsters. So as I said, his grandpa lived just outside of Ontario. He was the oldest of 14, and he got into the stuff because when he was in his 30s, he switched careers from having been a teacher his whole adult life to deciding to go to dental school. And when he was in dental school, he opened a practice, or after dental school, he opened a practice, and he really wanted to help patients who were anxious and scared, and topical anesthetics weren't really a thing at the time. So it sounds like he was always kind of into this kind of like otherworldly stuff. He considered himself a spiritualist in the vein of like the Fox sisters and that spiritualism movement that we've talked about before, that also Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was a part of. And the thing that I referenced before about Dan Aykroyd talking about something that's like kind of known not to be true was that when he was talking about this and the spiritualism movement and his grandfather, he was like, you know, there were the Fox sisters in New York, and they, you know, he talked about the Fox sisters like they were real. He was like, they were mediums, and it was found that there was a body in their basement that they predicted and all that stuff. I don't remember the ins and outs of it, but we do have an episode on that. That's one of the first episodes that we ever did. That's like pretty roundly debunked. And even one of the Fox sisters, I believe, wrote a book and or did a tour explaining how she fooled everybody, but he's citing it as though that's like
a
pivotal moment in the spiritualism movement that points to the truth of it.
Right.
So just interesting.
Yeah, I feel like to him, all these things are definitely
it
true.
It seems like it. Like, although I was actually kind of surprised to hear him reference his grandfather like debunking things, because I feel like I've never heard him talk about anything as though it's not just totally true.
Yeah.
So anyway, his grandfather wanted to help patients who were super anxious, and so he came across research or mentions of dentists who used hypnosis to calm their patients down and get them into a more relaxed state before they did the dental work so they'd be less upset. And it seemed to have sparked his curiosity about hypnotism and kind of trance states, and made him wonder if you can go into a state during hypnosis or doing a trance that's more conducive to being a conduit for the dead to communicate with the living. And that sort of kind of kicked his grandfather off on this like medium seance sort of like focus in his spiritualism.
Cool.
So his grandfather's name was Samuel, had a friend named Walter Ashurst, who was also fascinated with the spirit world. And when Samuel said he wanted to start holding seances on his farm, the farm that Dan Aykroyd later moved into, Asher said that he thought that he would be a good medium to kind of conduct those seances and that he could communicate with the spirits. We don't know a lot about Walter Ashurst. I Googled like Walter Ashurst medium and didn't find a whole lot, I guess, cause this was so long ago and it's pretty obscure. It's not like he was like a famous one, but what I found was that he said, or it said that as a child, he said he had visions, which his father said were just nightmares. He believed he was clairvoyant, which means that you're able to see things that you shouldn't normally be able to see. So meaning the future or things about a person that they're not telling you or showing you directly. So visions, and that he was able to communicate with unseen entities. So basically it does seem like this guy had the resume to back up him being somebody who could maybe be good at conducting seances.
Yeah.
So he moved in to Samuel Aykroyd's farm as a house guest, and it was supposed to be kind of temporary, and he ended up staying there for 12 years, basically acting as like the in-house official medium for these seances that they held near weekly at the farm. So Samuel left journals detailing all of this stuff that went on, all of his experiments and all the seances and everything from 1905 to 1933. And he recorded the events of about 80 seances that they held together.
Wow.
Yeah, this happened for years, almost weekly, I guess. And it's small detail, but I like it, that they found those journals in an old trunk of his. Dan Aykroyd's father, Peter, so Samuel's son, later formed those journals into a book co-written by Dan Aykroyd and his brother Peter Jr. called The True Story of Seances, Mediums, Ghosts, and Ghostbusters, which was released in 2009. So you can find that on Amazon and stuff. And they're actually re-releasing it this summer, Dan said in his Clamato interview, to coincide with the 35th anniversary of Ghostbusters, which is apparently this summer.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. So the journals say that Walter was able to go into a trance state, and here's where things get a little iffy. He contacted a bunch of people. One of them, kind of like the head honcho of who he contacted, the person who he seemed to think was one of his controls, he called him, quote unquote, or kind of like a guide to the spirit world who sort of ushered him through things, was somebody who he said was a former member of the Ming Dynasty in China named Li Long. And it was said that he spoke in Chinese when he was channeling Li Long, but nobody at the table understands Chinese.
Right.
So we can't really verify that that was Chinese.
Right.
So was he maybe just making gibberish sounds that he thought like sounded like the Chinese language?
And knew he
something
could get
I'd like
away
deposit
with it.
Because nobody here knows Chinese.
Yeah, exactly. I can just do whatever.
Right. Exactly. So that's kind of like a convenient person to be the head boss of this operation.
For sure.
Walter also said that he would have contact and channel an Irishman named Mike Whalen, an ancient Egyptian priest named Blue Light, and several Native Americans, but Li Long was definitely the star of the show. He also made contact with Samuel's great-grandfather, and they said that he might have materialized slightly during that seance, but some of the people saw him and some of the people didn't. So hard to say.
Right. I guess that's tricky too, though, because it's like this would be a somewhat faith-based thing.
Right. So like if you're somebody who's maybe all in and you're like really into the seance and you're really believing,
right,
like saying that it's true, maybe you're able to see the apparition of Sam's grandfather, then you're just not tuned into that frequency.
You're not permitted to see it.
Yeah, basically, you haven't gone to that level where you'd be able to see it.
Right.
So that doesn't necessarily totally discredit the idea of it.
Right.
I guess if anything, it might, I was going to say it might credit it more. Not really. But it doesn't totally discredit it.
Right.
So other phenomena took place during the seances other than him just kind of channeling and just taking Walter's word for it. Again, due to his journals and what he's saying. So just verified by those. During a seance held in Samuel's son Maurice's home. Samuel is Dan Aykroyd's great-grandfather.
Okay.
Maurice is Dan Aykroyd's grandfather. Maurice is Dan's dad's dad.
Okay.
So during a seance that was held in Samuel, who kicked off the jam, son Maurice's home, a trumpet-like instrument used to communicate with the dead floated over the heads of the attendees, he wrote.
Oh.
And a little bit more about the idea of a trumpet-like instrument. I tried to do a little bit of Googling to see if that's a thing that I could be like, this was a blah, 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 but I didn't find anything about that, but I'm not super surprised about that. And we'll revisit that. Sometimes it was said a whitish substance appeared in the dark, and that would be ectoplasm. But the thing is, it was apparently too fleeting for Samuel. I guess they would kind of like sort of see it. It would sort of go away. And he expressed in his journal some dissatisfaction with the fact that it wasn't physical and tangible. It was just barely visible in the dark, and it didn't actually have physical properties, this ectoplasm. He also really badly wanted to provoke materialization of a spirit. So like a full-bodied apparition, its physical embodiment coming into play where you're like, oh my God, it's the ghost of whatever, like right there in front of us, and you, there's no questioning it. So to this end, because this is really like a goal of his to get materialization to happen, they held the seances on a schedule and with the same friends basically every time, like at least the same core group, even if some people maybe switched around sometimes, to hopefully make the spirits and the spirit world feel comfortable and open up. They're like, this is consistent. These are people we know. We can trust them enough to materialize.
That's really interesting. I've not heard of anybody else trying like that approach.
I know. Yeah. I hadn't either. It is like kind of logical.
Yeah. Created an environment that the spirits that can get acclimated in. To.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Through Walter, the spirits said that they were trying to materialize and they asked for patience, but it never actually happened that Samuel got to see. So he passed away in 1933, and the seance group kind of slowly devolved over the next 10 years, which is still like a decent
stretch. That's a long time, yeah.
But the stories of this whole thing filtered through the family tree, partially because they were such a passion of Samuel. So there was lots of writing, and he had lots of literature about them and everything. But again, his son Maurice was all into it. So after Samuel's death, Maurice tried to build a device capable of capturing the voices of ghosts. So that's why I think it's not impossible that that was some sort of device, that horn thing or whatever that they had flying over their heads. I might not have been able to find it through Google because this was like an invention of Maurice's
Maurice cooked up.
Right.
That also feels very Ghostbusters-ish, right?
Exactly.
Like using like an actual tangible physical thing to interact with the spirit world.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of where Dan Aykroyd got it.
Yeah.
And he would try to perfect that and kind of tinker with it and everything until, through what means I don't know, the ghosts communicated to him that it wasn't possible. So he gave up. Tell that to white noise, I say.
Who told him that?
The ghosts.
How did they communicate it to him?
I don't know.
I wonder if it was like through his wife or something, like the ghosts were being channeled through his wife. Then they're like, give it up, Maurice.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just at the kitchen table, and he was like, can I have the peas? And he turned, she's like, give up the tinkering.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe she was like sick of the banging around and everything, so she was like, oh God, I'll just give him what he wants. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. I'll just give him one. He's like, I had to stop. The spirits told me.
They told me that it wasn't possible, so why am I going to go against their divine knowledge?
Yeah, really incredible.
It's a pretty good reason to stop, frankly. So then Maurice's son, Peter, Dan Aykroyd's dad.
So Samuel begat Morass. What the hell? I swear I didn't
mean
to.
I know you didn't. Think about those two orbs. They really got in there. It's a Freudian slip.
Samuel begat Maurice.
Yes.
Begat
Peter.
Peter begat
Dan. And Peter Jr., who's also into this
stuff. Peter Jr. When you were saying Dan Aykroyd's brother,
yeah.
I thought you were going to say Dan Aykroyd Jr., which doesn't make a lick of sense. But I got two sons. Hi, my name's Gary. I have two sons. Dan Aykroyd and Dan Aykroyd Jr. Two sons. They're brothers.
Like that. I feel like Junior works better as that almost.
It kind of does.
You know what I mean? Like how they'll be like, I don't know, like Pepsi and Diet Pepsi.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's just like the later version or just a slightly altered version of the original thing.
Yeah, I've got two kids. They're basically the same thing.
Right.
So we made a simple modification to one of their names.
Yeah. Frankly, it works. I like that.
The younger one is Junior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. I wish it was like that. But yes, that is how it works. So Peter, Dan's dad, was present at some of the seances when he was very, very young. He would, I guess, sometimes come to the table.
His family.
I know. It's wild, right? And he worked on that device that Maurice was trying to get going to listen to spirit voices with his dad when he was a kid. So he kind of grew up with the subject matter, and he was still into it when he had kids himself, especially after after inheriting his grandfather's journals from that trunk and his big library of spiritual literature. So Peter was still just kind of carrying on this family interest. And so that's why when Dan was growing up, there was that stuff all around him, and it influenced the writing of Ghostbusters, where some of those preoccupations and language of his grandfather's journal is present. So like talking about ectoplasm is directly from his grandfather's journals. Full-bodied apparitions and materialization, directly from his grandfather's journals.
That's so cool.
Isn't that awesome? It's actually a very nice story. It is.
I like that.
As well as his so that was all from his great grandfather's journals. So that language is in there. And then stuff from his grandfather Maurice's work about devices, like gadgets that you can kind of channel and communicate with ghosts through, which is really, really sweet.
I love that. There's a really sort of like interesting like heritage to the idea then.
Yeah.
And like a simple mathematical process of taking the work of his forebears.
Right.
And creating something new with it.
Yeah.
And it changed the world.
Yes, totally.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I didn't realize that, I didn't know any of this. I knew that he was into ghost stuff for real, but I think it's so cool that it's as specific as like his grandfather was kind of preoccupied with the idea of ectoplasm. So it's in there. It's not just vaguely like, my family was into this stuff. It's like he was going through his journals and then was like, that's really cool. I'll write that exact thing into the movie.
Yeah.
I love it. It's so sweet.
Yeah.
So like I said, he bought and lived in his grandfather's old house outside of Ontario, and he said that he's experienced things there. So in an interview with the Daily Beast, when he and his dad were doing press for the book, this is what he said about it. He said that he felt a massive jolt of electricity and witnessed pops and sparks all around him. It was just like I had been struck by lightning, he recalled. He later identified the occurrence in psychic literature as supernatural arcing. Whatever the cause, it was enough to convince him to renovate the farmhouse rather than knock it down and then decide to live there.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. So also in interviews from that press time, Peter and Dan acknowledged that they still have the same ambition that Samuel did, that they really still want to see proof of materialization documented and like black and white, and this is the deal in their lifetimes. And Peter is still alive. He's 97 now.
I was going to ask. You were talking about the book and Peter being around for it. That was the recent Clamato book.
Yes. The Clamato book just came out or is about to come out. But the reissue of Peter and Dan and Peter Jr.'s book.
Okay. Gotcha. I was like, All right, understood.
A lot of books and projects going on. But he's still alive. He's 97 years old.
That's amazing.
I know.
Yeah.
And he has this reissue of his book coming out, which apparently sold like decently well in the first place 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So Peter's idea about why they didn't see a full-bodied apparition during that time, or I'm saying full-bodied apparition because it's in Ghostbusters, they called it materialization. I think that they do reference it as full-bodied apparition, but I can just hear Dan Aykroyd saying that, so I say it. But Peter says that they might not have seen a materialization back then during Samuel's seances, even though they were trying so hard, because maybe there's some skeptic energy coming from some of the seance goers that was sort of messing with the ghost's ability or maybe even desire to be viewed.
So it is what you and I were saying.
Yeah.
Then, like, their theory at least is the same as what we posited, that if you're a skeptic, you throw the whole thing out of whack.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But I guess this is a little bit more yes or no, whereas like we were saying before that, I guess there was like a vague sort of fuzzy, not full-blown materialization that some people saw, but not all.
Yeah.
And I guess he's saying that it couldn't go beyond that point if there's anybody who's a skeptic in the circle.
Yeah.
And he also said that he thought it could be due to lack of proper materials to conduct the medium's abilities. And that wasn't elaborated on, but I'm assuming he means physical materials, like the stuff that he and his dad have been trying to build, like technology that could kind of harness things a little bit more.
Oh my God. If it comes out like the tech that the Aykroyds have, seriously, like what would you do? Like someday, you know, Dan Aykroyd holds a press conference.
He'd come out of the line.
If Dan Aykroyd, if there's an Aykroyd event, right, like how Apple does their yearly event where they announce
iPhone. Be all over that. Are you kidding me?
And Aykroyd brings
E3
out
for Aykroyd heads,
He brings out D3,
yeah.
And he brings out some sort of a giant crazy looking thing on a cart. And he's like, Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know that we've been trying to track down proof of extraterrestrials and life beyond the realms of the living. And I have a lot of amazing announcements to show you, things that are going to blow your minds. And people are like taking notes, like laughing and Googling pictures of Dan Aykroyd looking ridiculous for their articles. Yeah. And goes, now, take it away, Pop. And Peter Aykroyd pushes a button and then a ghost pops out.
Or, assuming this is a few years in the future, he says, take it away, Pop, and he pushes a button and Peter Aykroyd comes out of the machine because he's passed by this point.
Oh, my God.
Take it away, Pop.
Oh, my God.
I'm here.
He doesn't have a better opening line than that. I'm here.
What else can you say?
Oh, my God. It looks like a bunch of horns like sitting and it's like, and a ghost comes out of the ends of the horns and materializes. I'm here. Back to you, son.
It's like a
That's my dad.
A giant cornucopia made up of like ear horns, basically. Once you combine all their forces together, they need to all be touching and create a larger structure.
Yes, because the energy needs to get pushed through
right.
to exponentially increase the density of the air inside to
exactly.
enable
But say it more technically,
Peter
you
to
know.
Take on form.
Yes. To materialize to a full light apparition. So Dan thinks that they need further research on materialization and apparitions in order to complete his great grandfather's legacy and hopefully hold D3. Here's a quote from that Daily Beast article.
It's so stupid. There's only one of them that whose name starts with a D, but they called it D3.
It rhymes.
Because it sounds E3. Like E3. Yeah.
It's only Dan.
D3.
Yeah, he's outnumbered by P's. P3.
DP.
Because it's Peter and Peter.
DP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's Peter Senior, Peter Junior, and Dan. P3.
P3.
I like D3. D3. It's got a soft spot. It's got Dan's
going to
be.
Dan Aykroyd have a
Dan's
son?
Dan's going to be the mouthpiece for this. Yes, he does.
He does?
Yes.
Is his son into this stuff?
I don't know.
He's either really into it or really not.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet
but he would be the first
around.
In. Yeah. The first in four generations to not
to not be into it. That's true. I wonder.
Yeah.
I'll make that my mini monster for next week. It might be a one sentence mini monster where I'm like, I don't know, but I'll follow up with you guys because I'm very curious myself.
How about DPGP? And it's for Dan, Peter, and Grandpa. DPGPGGP.
You're leaving Peter Jr. out of the equation. Oh, did you just do it?
Okay, Peter Jr.
So here's the thing. Peter Jr. has a writing credit on that book, but he wasn't part of this interview process at all. So I wonder if, like, I'm not sure. Maybe he just did, like, a very quick pass over the book, or maybe he was involved, but he just didn't like the press or something. Maybe. It seems like a Dan and Papa production.
Yeah, and Peter Jr. is like, well, I was on this, but...
Yeah, it's like not real. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Finished.
There was no other Peter Jr.
Okay.
Here. Yeah.
So DPGPGGP.
Yes. Three.
Dan, Peter, Grandpa, Great Grandpa.
Right.
Yeah. Three.
Yeah. Three. I can't wait.
Yeah.
So here is what Dan says about what he would like to see happen to complete his great grandfather's legacy. I would like to see more hard physicists come in and start to analyze what's going on, the younger Aykroyd said. Are oxygen and nitrogen and hydrogen molecules coalescing to produce these visions in front of people? What? I'd love it if some research were done on materialization, which is the most exciting part of this, where full-formed limbs come out of a medium's mouth and even a full-formed body. Ooh. It'd be nice to see some DNA and see if it's the DNA of the person exuding this massive ectoplasm or the DNA of another being. I did a very brief Google of a weird... I put, like, limbs coming out of medium's mouth or something. And it seems like there were some probably doctored pictures like that during the spiritualism movement. I saw some, like, oldish pictures come up, and I decided not to go super far into it. It also reminded me that there was that gross movie that I've never seen, The Haunting in Connecticut or whatever.
Yep, that's what I thought of.
Yeah. So I guess that's a thing.
Yeah, somebody just has goo come out of their mouth. Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to end with this. On the show that I referenced before, The Clamato Show, The host asked if technology growing and things being debunked, like ghosts and stuff being debunked by technology, and the editor's note by me, not necessarily debunked, but they're just not, you would think maybe that with this technology, we would be able to prove it by this
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
It's just that we haven't been able to prove it. Does that shake Dan Aykroyd's belief in this stuff? And he said, no, he said the supernatural, the invisible world, the paranormal are very much at work in our world. And you see a lot of that now, and you see a lot now that media is dependent on this content. And then he talked about how he likes the travel and entertainment channel, which I think must be in Canada. And he likes things like haunted hospitals, haunted hotels. Like, he started kind of talking like rapid fire about shows.
Right.
And so basically, unsurprisingly, Dan Aykroyd is one of us.
Yep.
He's watching these rando ghost shows and loving them.
Yeah, I that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. I really wonder why he doesn't produce anything like that.
I know. It made me wonder the same thing. He was like, yeah, I like these shows. They go to haunted hotels. They go to whatever. And they actually do the research and to find out who the people are who are haunting these locations.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, why aren't you doing the research to find... You know what I mean? But he's doing a lot. He's putting out books about Clamato cocktails.
He's a busy man.
Yeah, he's got his crystal skull
vodka. Yep. Yeah, there's a whole thing about that I didn't really get into because it's alien based,
right?
But it's basically, it's just like a rabbit hole about crystal skulls more than anything.
Yeah, if you've seen like Indiana Jones, the Kingdom of the crystal skull. Yeah, it's basically that lore.
Yeah,
that he kind of built a vodka company around.
Yeah, exactly. And boy, does he push that vodka.
Oh yeah, he's like always holding it.
Yeah,
yeah.
He went on the Tonight Show and was advertising his vodka, which I've never seen anyone else do.
I've seen people go on shows to just advertise, like, you know, like the new KK Beauty bronzer is out.
Really?
Yeah.
Like on Jimmy Fallon?
Yeah.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, then he put on sunglasses and played the harmonica for a while.
Yeah, during this interview, he sang the blues.
Yeah.
The headline and like the little sum up of this interview was really funny. It was like, we talked to Dan Aykroyd about his new book about Caesars, sing the blues, talk about ghosts, and something. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah.
He's a busy man.
But you know what? He circled it right back to his book about Caesars. He was like, yeah, like the end of this interview, the part about ghosts, he was like, yeah, so they're reissuing the book for the 35th anniversary. It's the 35th anniversary of Ghostbusters, just like it's the 50th anniversary of the Caesar.
Wow.
And the interviewer was like, okay, great. You know what? We'll come right back around to that now.
Yep. It's time to leave the interview.
Yes.
It's time to say bye-bye.
Well, no, it was time to go back to talking about Clamato.
Oh, well, yeah, you got to get
really
back
more about Caesars. For some reason, I think Clamato is funny.
He's remarkable.
Yeah.
So here's something that I think is interesting. Now, having heard you go into some of the Aykroyd family history that seems to be largely about this farm.
Yes.
Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new movie coming.
Yes. I thought about this.
Coming next year, it's directed by Jason Reitman, son of Ivan Reitman, who directed the first two Ghostbusters movies.
Right.
It's said to be connected to the original two Ghostbusters movies in the way that the quote-unquote female Ghostbusters from a few years ago was not.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing we know about it is this little promo teaser thing they put online of a camera zooming in to a spooky barn in the middle of nowhere, which houses the famous Ghostbusters car, the Ecto-1.
Right.
I wonder.
I know.
Could they be playing on some of the origins of the Ghostbusters idea by going back to the family farm?
I wonder that myself.
Is it Ray Stantz's family farm where he learned about Ghostbusters stuff in the first place?
Mm-hmm. I know. I wonder that. I think it's not impossible.
I think it's because not a
obviously
bad idea.
So much of Ghostbusters plays into like Aykroyd family history.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's pretty natural.
I honestly like I've been not anti the new Ghostbusters movie, but really skeptical of the new Ghostbusters movie. I think everybody who's working on it has the right mindset about, actually, you know what?
Yeah, well, there's family history all over it.
Jason Reitman, who directed it, tweeted about Earthbreak and said that he listened to it and he loved it.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think that if they're, and I don't know that they are, but if they are trying to recapture the magic of Ghostbusters, go back to the magic that Dan Aykroyd captured.
Yeah.
Right? Go back to the origin of where the idea came from. And it might be interesting to talk about people who were dabbling in the macabre on their own, just trying to figure something out in the barn.
Right. I know.
That could be a really interesting starting point for a new story.
I know. I'm curious now, having read about the barn thing, whether that's actually going to be part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that clip was just a little, like, it's almost like an Easter egg in a weird way. Like, right. That clip meant more than we realized it meant.
I would love that.
I know, I would too.
Yeah. Also, Dan Aykroyd said that he wrote a prequel to Ghostbusters that takes place in the 60s where he calls them the three characters.
Uh-huh.
Ignoring Winston.
Yeah.
But then again, they wouldn't meet Winston until the 80s.
Okay, that's true.
But he says where the three characters meet in high school.
Yeah.
And I don't think I want that.
He'd be writing it, he says, right? I guess
he says he wrote it.
It would depend on who's attached. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It doesn't sound like something I really want. But then if, like, people who I can't even think off the top of my head where I'm like, oh, I love that guy. I love that guy. And, like, I love this director and this writer. Then yeah. I'd be like, okay. But on its face, I don't love movies that go back to the people we know as adults as teenagers.
And they're the same as they were.
Yeah, I don't like it.
they're hunting ghosts, even though they won't even see a real ghost.
Yeah.
Until they're in their 30s.
Yeah, there's, like, stuff that doesn't make sense or yeah. It's kind of annoying to see a kid trying to, like, get the same manner. Of right. That adult, I just don't want it.
Yeah, somebody trying to be Egon, kid trying to be Egon.
Yeah, he's all like that. Yeah, yeah. But again, maybe I'd be shocked. Maybe I'm like, oh wait, actually.
Yeah, maybe better to keep an open mind than
right.
Poo-poo it.
On its face, it's not my favorite subgenre.
But yeah, he's always trying to get new Ghostbuster stuff going.
Yeah, he and said you know what? I hope he does. He always does.
He said that there was like 10 years of ideas for Ghostbusters.
I'm sure. The way he talks, can you imagine the way he brainstorms?
It's
gotta be insane
to see even just one Aykroyd journal.
Yes,
that would be wild.
Oh, chock a block full.
Wild,
front and back.
Well, man. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. That's the front and back of this episode.
It absolutely is. We've gone through all Dan Aykroyd's orbs.
That's right.
Shining in the moonlight, out on the balcony.
What a blessing.
And a curse. thank you all so much for hanging out with us for a very special Guide to the Unknown, about Dan Aykroyd. Honestly, is there any other celebrity that is this outspoken about their belief in the paranormal and in aliens?
I don't think there are any other celebrities who are as famous as him, who are as outspoken about this stuff. Like Robbie Williams, who's a singer from the UK, who has had like some minor success in the US in like the early aughts or late 90s. He's super duper into alien stuff. And I don't know a whole ton about it. I think he's pretty out and proud about it, but just you don't really hear about it that much because he's not famous here.
And obviously Tom DeLonge.
Yeah, but he also doesn't even like really, he doesn't do a whole lot of press and stuff like that about it. I think Dan Aykroyd is the loudest of the famous people who are open about it. But like, I mean, Tom DeLonge has a UFO show coming out, I think the 31st of this month.
Yeah.
That's going to be on, I think, National Geographic. I'm not sure. Look it up.
I think that sounds right. Yeah.
It's coming out this month for sure, in May of 2019. So maybe he's going to start doing some more press for that.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
We'll see. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, man. Yeah. All right. Well, I hope you all had a good time hanging out with us.
I learned so much tonight.
I learned more about Dan Aykroyd than I ever hoped to know.
I know. I thought that I had no idea it went so far back in his family.
Yeah, that is really fascinating.
Yeah.
Samuel Morass.
Yeah.
Peter and Dan.
Right.
Yeah.
And poor Peter Jr.
Poor Peter
Jr. Was either left off or poor Peter Jr. because he got lumped in when he didn't want to be.
See you, PJ.
But he just doesn't seem as invested in this as everybody else that I've come across.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all sort of a little embarrassed about Peter Jr. He's he's a scientist.
Yeah.
He's a nuclear physicist.
He's got, you know, like a critical mind.
Likes,
not to say these people have critical minds here, but they're
facts.
Just. Yeah. Yeah. So.
You know. We don't like to talk about it. Anyway, if you enjoyed this show, please consider sharing with friends of yours who might also enjoy it. You can go give us a review on Apple Podcasts or on any of your favorite podcast apps that give you the ability to write a review. Please do.
It would
love
really, really appreciate it.
Yeah. You can hit us up on patreon.com/GTTUpod if you want to donate to us because you enjoy what you hear every week.
Yeah. It's kind of like leaving a tip for us.
Yep.
Because we put this stuff out for free every week.
We also have a secret group on Facebook where listeners and viewers of the show can talk to us and each other.
Yep.
If you go to facebook.com/groups/GTTUpod. Speaking of which, @GTTUpod is our handle on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, where you can follow us to stay up to date with spooky news throughout the week.
Mm-hmm.
And you might also be able to talk to Kristen, and myself on social media.
That's right. I am at Chillin' Kristen on Instagram.
I am at The Myth Traveler.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you all so much for hanging out with us.
Yeah.
I really hope you had a good time. And we will see you next week when we're going to be delving into more of the spooky world of which most people dare not think.
That's right.
But until that time comes, we must travel.
Back to the netherworld. Go we.